Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be bothered with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a cheese puff, and I love films. As Richard E. Byrd once said, few men during their lifetime come anywhere near exhausting the resources dwelling within them. There are deep wells of strength that are never used. You think you couldn't make it through all 5 hours and 14 minutes of Fanny and Alexander, but you can and you could and you will and you'll even enjoy it too. Deep. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Himesh Patel, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, Jameela Jamil, and even Bed Ayambles. But this week, it's the brilliant horror film director, Rob Savage. You can watch all of Ted Lasso, seasons 1 to 3, and all of Shrinking, season 1, on Apple TV+. Give them a watch. Like them, love them. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Rob. We chat, we talk secrets, he talks about the best beginning to a film. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free with all sorts of extra stuff. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So Rob Savage is an excellent director. He directed Host, he directed Dashcam, he directed the first two episodes of Soulmates, and now he has a film in the cinema called The Boogeyman, which you should also see. He's an excellent director, a very nice man. We recorded this on Zoom a few weeks ago, and he was an absolute joy, and I really think you're going to enjoy this one. And if you haven't seen The Boogeyman, go see it at the cinema. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 254. Of films to be buried with. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a writer, a producer, a director, a soulmater, a true horrorer, and one of the finest horror directors of his generation. Here with his new film and all sorts of other things, will you please welcome to the show? It's the brilliant, it's the amazing, it's the wonderful, it's Rob Savage!
Thank you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not bad, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Are you in LA?
I am, yeah, I'm in Burbank. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in LA too. Oh yeah, yeah. Now, Rob Savage, for those of you who don't know, we first met, you directed the first two episodes of Soulmates very, very, very well. But that is a show all about love. And ever since then, you've made fucking incredible horrors. And it turns out you're the fucking horror guy.
I got all the love out of my sister.
Yeah, we milked you for your love and then you went dark. And you made Host, which I think is a fucking masterpiece that you made
Thank
in
you.
Lockdown, which is a Zoom film. It scared the shit out of me. It's fucking amazing. Then you made Dashcam, and now you've made The Boogeyman, which I went to a preview of with Mae Martin. And it is big. That is a big old fucking Hollywood film. And I have many questions for you. And one of the things...
It's a real movie.
It's a real big movie. And you're so good at set pieces. I was thinking that when there's so many bits in it where you're like, yeah, this is like... listen, I think you're good at lots of things, but you're very good at set pieces. Like, you're very good at, like, just sort of ideas of, like, when the girl's looking under the bed, the way you film that. And I won't spoil anything, but the way you light it, it's, like, such a good idea. Stuff like that. Yeah. You have really good ideas of, like, where to hide things.
Well, I think idea is the word. Like, I always try, every single scare scene, I try and have, like, a central idea behind it. Like, I'll literally put it up on the walls. We'll do cards on the walls. And be like, what's the thing that you'll tell your friend about in this scene? What's the, if you could boil it down to one like drunken slurred description of this at the bar, what would it be?
Mm-hmm.
And I find like if you can hook it around just one thing that's really easy to get your hands around, people really respond to it.
Yeah, it's fucking great. And tell me this, like having gone from Host, which is very small and you made with your friends, and then Dashcam, which is bigger, but still seems more contained.
Tiny budget still, yeah.
Yeah, to this, which feels like a proper Hollywood movie made with, I'm assuming, lots of execs and studio. And how was it for you transitioning into that? How was all the kind of relationships part of that? Was it easy? Was it difficult? Did they trust you? Can you tell me?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of having done a couple of movies, especially Host, where we made it for nothing, we made it on our own backs. Mm. Every creative decision came down to me. It was like it wasn't a movie that was swarmed with execs. And then it goes on and does well. Your voice in the room suddenly has a lot more clout. So when you're sitting there with all the execs, you're speaking as the person who made Host, which carried a lot of weight at the time when I came on board, which was right after Host. And I was spoiling for a fight when I came on board. I was so ready to be fucked over in every which way. And it just wasn't like that. It wasn't like that.
Right.
I remember when I first started working with American people, I just didn't trust them at all. I thought they were sneaky. And I wasted a good couple of years working with American producers, but just being really guarded and fighting them on every single thing and just being a nuisance.
Mm.
And so I was really, you know, I was really wary of not doing that on this one, making sure to go with my gut and not back down, but also not to be a dickhead, you know. From the very beginning, we were all kind of on the same page about what we wanted this movie to be. It wasn't an A24 movie. It wasn't The Witch. I wasn't trying to sneak in, you know, a Bo is Afraid under the guise of a studio movie. I wanted to do a popcorn movie, but just a really good one. And so when they figured out that I was doing just that and I wasn't trying to shortchange them and make an art movie, they were perfectly happy to leave me alone. It's great.
That's great. It also sounded like it seemed very genuine. And I know that at the screening I was at, a lot of the actors were there and you did a Q&A stuff. Everyone seemed really, really nice about you. As in, it seemed very, very genuine. Like they'd all had, that the actors had a really good time with you and that it had been a really good experience on set with them and stuff. And there's like real emotional shit in it. And you obviously created a good atmosphere for everyone. It's impressive.
Yeah, I think it helps that we got such a silly title. So everyone reads that they got an offer coming in for The Boogeyman and they roll their eyes. And then, you know, it can only go up from there. So, as soon as they realize you want them to do real acting and you're going to give them real notes and, you know, and the script's got some really meaty bits in it, you know, you just see their eyes light up. They reanimate suddenly because they get to do these really beautiful grounded scenes that just happen to be in a movie about a silly monster.
Can I ask you this? How much was practical effects and how much is CGI on like a percentage in that film?
All the creatures CGI. There's no practical at all. But we had a guy, in a spotted suit who was, you know, every time a lamp was getting knocked over or somebody was fighting it back, we had that real guy throwing his weight around. Because when you're working with CG, it's all about giving weight to the character. So every time stepping on something, we needed a real depression. It was all about how he interacts with the world.
It's pretty impressive. There's one thing you said at this Q&A, which I would love you to repeat here, if you don't mind, about... Because I hadn't even really thought about it, that it was a monster movie. Like, I watched it, and I didn't think of that as the genre that it is. And then you said a thing about Jaws and your edit suite. Can you say that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was always coming at this movie as a haunted house movie, even though it's got this flesh and blood monster that really wrestles with the characters at the end, and you see it, and it's a monster. It's not a ghost. But I treated it like something a bit more spectral that was lurking in the shadows. And I really wanted to make sure that you didn't see too much of it. I didn't want people to leave this movie feeling like, oh, I've seen the boogeyman, he's not all that. If we, you know, if we demystify the boogeyman, then that would be awful. So yeah. I had on the wall of the edit the amount of screen time that the shark is in Jaws, and then the amount of screen time that the alien is in Aliens. And I wanted to make sure that we didn't ever go above that. And in fact, I think we're a second less of the shark in Jaws, and we're a second less of the alien in Aliens. So it's pretty minimal, but still pretty scary.
Congratulations. I think it'll be a very successful film. Do you know what you're doing next?
I got one lined up. I mean, things have stalled a bit because of the writer's strike, which, you know, go writers. Mm-hmm. So I'm happily taking a break. But there's another movie that's sort of in a similar vein. It's another kind of demonic horror movie based on one of my short films.
Which one?
Salt.
Oh, fantastic. When I said to you, I realized as I said it, I said, you're a horror guy. And then I thought, oh, maybe you'd be offended by that. And you'd be like, no, I want to do 300 types of different things. Or do you actually sort of like being, no, I want to do horror.
Love being the horror guy. No, because horror's like a sugar pill. You know, you can kind of do anything within horror. Like this, this movie, I'm really proud of the performances and some of the scenes that are just the family working through their trauma in this movie that have no monster at all. Are some of the best scenes in the movie, or some of the scenes that I'm the proudest of. And you can do that within horror, and you can still get big audiences because of the promise of monsters jumping out of closets. But there's just a bit of a trade-off, and you can really do anything so long as you deliver on the scares.
Well, Rob, there's one other thing I forgot to tell you. I meant to tell you when I saw you earlier in the week, actually, but I didn't get a chance because you was doing, lots of people were trying to talk to you, and I thought, I probably shouldn't interrupt and tell him this. But I did at the time think, I must tell him. But then I thought, no, I'll tell him when we talk on the podcast. So I'll just tell you now. I'll tell you, you've died. You're dead. Dead.
Shit.
Dead.
Dead.
Dead. Dead. How did you die?
If it's coming back to me correctly, I think I froze to death. I think I froze.
Oh, wow.
It was maybe like liquid nitrogen. It was definitely something sci-fi.
Oh, wow.
I got knocked over, or I was pushed or something, and I shattered into just a million pieces.
You had a T-1000 death.
Yeah, or Jason X.
Wow, shit. Do you know how you got covered in liquid nitrogen?
That bit I don't remember. I think I was just walking down the street, and next moment,
there was like a fissure in the earth and it squirted up nitrogen all over you.
I think maybe there was some truck that had liquid nitrogen in it, if that's a thing, and it just poured on me accidentally.
It's not a bad way to go. As long as it sort of all hits you at once. I'm wondering how long it takes till you're frozen and dead.
It was a two-tiered thing. You know, I remember freezing and then being frozen and then teetering, and then it was falling and shattering that really hurt.
Right. That's the bit. Fuck. Yeah, I wonder in the section where you're frozen, you're still conscious. You're still like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I've lost my balance.
That was actually...
smash my head.
That's my worst fear, actually, is dying in a hilarious way. But and knowing in the last moments how hilarious the death is.
I'm going to look so stupid. Bang. Okay.
Yeah. Did you ever hear there's this story? I think about this story all the time. There was this guy who he was like a Wall Street guy, like a kind of cocaine sniffing Wall Street guy. And he got unbreakable glass installed on his office windows. He was at the top of this big skyscraper, and he had a client over. And he was showing off his new unbreakable windows, and he was ramming it with his shoulder, being like, look, it's never going to break. I can do anything, throwing his phone at it. And he ran at it, and the window didn't break, but it popped out of its socket.
Oh, shit.
And he fell and splattered on the ground. And the window didn't break. He did, but the window didn't break when he landed.
Oh, wow. Jesus Christ. That's a great way to die. Not a bad way to die.
But that's what I'm most afraid of in that moment. Yeah. That just realizing what a tit you've made of yourself as you plummet towards the ground.
To be fair to you, in your liquid nitrogen death, it doesn't seem like it's your fault. Unless you're trying to impress a woman and you're going, look at this pot of liquid nitrogen. I bet it wouldn't hurt me.
But I can drink it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems fairly like accidental that it happened to you. But like you say, you don't remember how it happened. So maybe it was you were trying to impress a lady.
I'm blocking out the humiliating aspect of it, probably.
Yeah, that adds up now. Do you worry about death? I mean, you must think about it a lot in your job.
Yeah, I don't really. I think I did a lot more when I was younger and moodier. I think I've kind of just built a life where I'm so busy that I don't really have time to worry about death. I think that's the way that I stave off most worrying. It's just by keeping, I'm just doing things all
yes,
the time.
Yes, that's the secret. That's how I avoid all feelings.
Yes, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you stop for a moment, it all catches up. I mean, it's really, it's quite elastic. It bounces back pretty fast. But so long as you keep moving.
Keep fucking moving, son.
What about you?
Oh, I just keep fucking moving and never think about anything.
Yeah, great.
What do you think happens when you die?
I think probably it's just curtains. It's just black.
Black curtains.
It's just black curtains descend on you, swaddle you. But I don't know. But then I don't believe that I know anything. So it's probably the opposite of what I think. It's probably eternal damnation.
Curtains opening up. Oh.
Yeah, this is probably just the first stage.
You know what is interesting? I've done a lot of these. Done a lot of these episodes. No one, I don't think, unless I'm being rude and forgetting someone, no one's ever thought they're going to hell. Like, it almost never comes up, hell. Despite all that has been put out in the world, hell rarely shows up on this show, which is interesting.
Yeah.
For a thing that was really, you know, pumped into the world, that no one's really bought into hell. But you have. You're the first.
Yeah. Cool. I'm certain.
Finally, someone.
If it exists, that's where I'm heading.
Fantastic. What do you think hell is?
It's probably being forced to rewatch all of... I mean, there's a theme emerging here. It's probably being forced to watch all the most humiliating moments or moments you've disappointed yourself or relationships you fucked up and opportunities missed for eternity.
Fucking hell. Yeah, that's good. You're good at this horror shit. I got news for you. There is a hell, but you ain't going. You're going to heaven. And heaven is filled with your favourite things. It's filled with your favourite thing. What is it?
Movies.
Well, all right. There's movies, wall-to-wall movies everywhere. And everyone is very excited to see you. They're big fans of everything you've done, including all your humiliating stuff. Some of them watch that stuff and they go, hey, it's all understandable. What a great guy. And they want to talk to you about your life. They want to talk about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing, Rob Savage?
You know, I think the first movie that I ever saw, remember seeing, was Hercules, the Disney movie.
Amazing.
And I don't know if I've even seen it since. But it's a weird one because the thing that I remember most was the Happy Meal toy that I got of the movie, not the movie itself. I got a Happy Meal toy of the Hydra that Hercules has to fight.
Oh, great.
And that was such a special thing because it was the first time I ever got to go to McDonald's. I was raised vegan, no sugar, no salt, nothing fun. And my friend's dad took us to McDonald's and I was forced to like swear that I wouldn't tell my parents. So I had this little contraband Hydra and I kept it. I kept it from my parents like it was, you know, it was like a murder weapon or something. So I had to hide it away.
How old were you?
God, I don't know. I was tiny. I must have been like, I don't know. I don't know ages. I'm not good with ages. I was anywhere between 5 and 15.
So was that the first burger you'd eaten?
Yeah, I think the first proper burger that wasn't made of lentils.
Wow, shit. You must have been like, dung, 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 dung.
Oh, it was amazing. And my mouth was so dry from all the salt. I remember I felt like I was a mummy. But I do remember the height. I mean, that's the only bit I remember from the movie, I think, because of the toy, was the height, the him fighting the Hydra and the kind of green blood and the decapitation. I mean, I guess it tracks.
Yeah, it really does. That was the toy you got. You didn't get Hercules, you got the monster.
Yeah. And I remember being really fascinated by you know, when the Hydra got beheaded, it wasn't just kind of cartoon. You saw like the bone and you saw the windpipe of the creature. It's like, it's quite full on. And it was like that really early,
yeah.
That really early CGI that looked really terrible, but was was amazing at that age.
Are you an only child or do you have siblings?
I got a brother.
Older or younger?
Younger.
Okay. So he wasn't there.
I can't imagine so.
He wasn't there at Hercules.
He might not have existed then.
Oh, wow. Wild. Yeah. Okay, what is the film that made you cry the most? Do you cry? Are you a crier?
Yeah, I'm a big cry. Anything makes me cry. But, I think you'll probably relate to this. As somebody who constantly moves to evade any feeling, movies make me cry more than life.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because that's where you stop, right? You move, and then you stop and watch a film, and then you cry for 2 hours, and then you gotta run.
It sounds healthy when you say it.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the movie, weirdly, that makes me cry the most is the ending of The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Great movie.
Incredible movie. And there's a sequence that shows... I mean, it's 2007 when it came out. It's not going to be a spoiler. It's the sequence that shows what happened to...
It's also
yeah, what happened to Bob after he killed Jesse James and was then himself assassinated. Mm. And it's about how his life transpired after he imagined that he'd be living in glory after killing the only person who he ever admired and looked up to and maybe loved. Part of it's the score. It's got Nick Cave and Warren Ellis have just the most beautiful cue that plays mm-hmm. over that scene. And there's something I can't quite get at it with words, but there's something about the idea of what it takes to be great and how some people just don't have it in them. And some people, you know, the last words of the movie is it talks about Robert Ford staring up at the ceiling and not being able to find the right words to say before he dies. And there's something about just being inarticulate and having aspirations of greatness, but having them always just beyond your reach. That movie, it just feels like it so profoundly articulates that idea.
It's so interesting now. I was thinking when you're saying that, like Amadeus, for example, is another film about like a special person and the person next to them. And the person next to them is the story. And maybe because that's what we more relate to. And you know the Book of Prayer for Owen Meany? Do you know that book? Which is also some sort of a film. It's kind of about this very special person, Owen Meany, but it's told by his best friend. And his best friend, his whole thing is, I will never be this special, you know, and yet as the reader, you're relating to the friend much more than you are the special genius person, because that's how we all feel. I think it's much more relatable to be Robert Ford than it is Jesse James, right?
Yeah,
because we all don't feel great and special.
Totally,
I assume.
Totally, and the thing the film does so beautifully is it shows how burdened Jesse James is by the legend. That the legend almost becomes something that he can't. It's almost like a spirit that's been conjured. It's not anything that he's in control of. And ultimately, you know, there's that beautiful scene, which again is probably the point where I start crying in that movie about 2 hours in. He realizes that the two Ford brothers are going to kill him, and he goes and fixes the picture almost as a surrender of, you know, if these two people who I've been my authentic self with are here to kill me for some fleeting glory, I'm just going to turn my back to them and see what happens. It's like,
yeah,
it's a beautiful scene.
Weirdly, it's a bit like Marie Antoinette, the Sofia Coppola film,
yeah,
in that both that and this film, I would argue, are also kind of about celebrity, and they're also about Brad Pitt and Kirsten Dunst. Like, Marie Antoinette is a film about Kirsten Dunst, I think. It's like a love letter to her, and it's the impossibility of being Kirsten Dunst,
yeah,
and then being misunderstood as a celebrity or whatever. And with Jesse James, it's like, it's Brad Pitt. It's Brad Pitt as a celebrity, beloved movie star that can never really be this thing that everyone projects something onto. And that, yeah, and as that film goes on, he becomes sort of bleaker because he's sort of like has to, for any of this to survive, he has to be a shell.
Yeah. And it's it's the only movie where he looks like vaguely his own age. You know, he looks haggard and his eyes are so deep set. And there's that beautiful bit at the beginning where it's like the voiceover is talking about he had this condition where he was always blinking, like he was kind of overwhelmed by the world. And it's kind of like this beautiful poetic reading over this shot of Brad Pitt staring unblinking into the sun. And it's almost like the narration is kind of like mythologizing him, even as we're seeing him, and it doesn't match up. Yeah. There's this constant mismatch of how he's presented and the actuality of him.
Great, great answer. Now, here's the big one for you. What is the film that scared you the most?
I've got a really boring answer for this because it's The Exorcist.
Oh, great.
Won't be the movie I talk about. Only because I already talked about growing up in this vegan lentil household, but I was also raised for a few years without a TV. My parents tried to raise me with no TV, which backfired. But they really, really didn't want me to watch scary movies. And so that was all I wanted to watch.
Hmm.
And The Exorcist,
wow.
The Exorcist and Silence of the Lambs were the two that my dad took me to the side one day and said, listen, I know you're going to watch horror movies because we've told you not to, but just person to person, there's two movies I want you to not watch. And that's Silence of the Lambs and The Exorcist.
You immediately went to the video.
Immediately.
Can I get Silence of the Lambs and Exorcist, please?
Exactly. But they
Wow, what
they had such an aura around them.
He must have known what he was doing.
He must have been like, these two are good. I can let you watch them. He must have known. That's crazy.
Maybe. But it really, I had this feeling watching The Exorcist after it had finished, feeling like maybe my DNA had been altered in some way. Like I'd done something so bad that I couldn't walk back on it. And I felt so, so ashamed.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that one was a big one.
How old were you? Do you remember that? I know you don't know age, but was it like, were you very young or were you a teenager?
I think I was like 15, maybe. I think I watched that a little later.
Okay.
Partly because I really thought that movie was going to curse me in some way.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Weirdly, with The Exorcist, I had the sort of, I think I saw it too young and I didn't really get it. I sort of thought it was boring and I didn't find it scary. I thought it was boring and I just thought, this is stupid. And then I watched it only a few years ago and I was like, this film is fucking terrible and so dark. I didn't realise how dark it is. And exactly that feeling of like, there's something very horrible in this. Like, it feels so real. And when I think it's when she wets herself, that scene is so kind of real and you're just like, oh my God, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it makes you feel so uncomfortable.
There's something
horrible.
There's something in the celluloid of that movie that feels a bit evil. It's like I had the exact experience with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre recently. I watched
That's
it around
horrible.
Horrible. I watched it around the same time, maybe when I was 14. And I was such a gore hound then that I was kind of disappointed by it because there's really not very much on screen gore. It's all just the vibe of that movie is so nasty and oppressive. And then I didn't watch it for like 10 years, over 10 years. And then I got asked to do, they're doing a Blu-ray release and I got asked to do an interview about it. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And they sent me the remastered version of it. And I watched it on a plane to New Orleans, which is where we shot The Boogeyman. And about halfway into it, it's the scene where at the dinner table and Granddad comes out with the hammer. I just realized, I realized that I hadn't taken a breath in for about 30 seconds. And I was like, oh, I'm having a panic attack. And I literally had to get up and walk up and down. I couldn't finish the movie. It was like, there was something so just like relentlessly unpleasant about watching that movie.
It's horrible.
And I think now it's
really horrible.
It's like, it's maybe the best horror movie ever made. It's like the most like viscerally disturbing horror movie ever made.
Yeah. Wow. Is that your answer? That's your...
Those two, I can't...
After Exorcist.
Yeah.
Those are your two.
One of them I felt like...
Naughty boy.
Like my immortal soul was maybe tarnished by watching it. And then the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the film that keeps me up at night recently.
And what did you think of Silence of the Lambs when you finally saw it the day after The Exorcist?
It's not in the same league as those ones in terms of scares, but I just thought it was brilliant. And actually, it's got the ending of that movie is one of the endings that I reference more than anything else. It's got one of the scariest endings to a horror movie, where she goes down into the basement and Buffalo Bill uses his night vision.
Yeah,
it's just excruciating.
Yeah, Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
What is the film that you love? Most people don't like it. It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it forever and a day. Rob Savage.
The Village.
I like The Village.
The Village is great, isn't it?
I like The Village. Really underrated.
Yeah.
The Village is great.
I think it's the movie that everyone kind of agrees is where M. Night started going downhill. But I think it's one of my favorite of his movies. I remember seeing it. And it was the first time I went to see a movie with a bunch of friends, and I left being like, that was amazing. And everyone else is like, it felt like everyone else had seen a different movie. I just thought it has such a kind of sadness to it, that movie, that when you find out the secret as to why everyone's, I mean, not ruining the twist, but you know, why they are where they are and why they've made the decisions they've made. It's got a real heaviness that feels lived in, that doesn't feel flippant or cheap to me. And it's really truly scary. And there are images in the movie that I, you know, since I saw it as a kid, like, it haven't left me. The walkers in the woods are still genuinely terrifying. And the sequence where, what is it, Bryce Dallas Howard is running back to Joaquin Phoenix, and he's reaching out his hand, and they're yelling at him to shut the door. The tension in that scene is just Hitchcockian. It's some of M. Night's best directing in that movie.
I remember thinking this is The Village, because I thought this, what's his film after that? That I like, sometimes the films of his that I don't love, I still go, he's a very good director. Even when sometimes I don't like the writing of the film, I think he can't help himself as a director. Like, I think he's a good director. And there's stuff in The Village. There's that, I haven't seen a lot of it, but there's a scene with Joaquin Phoenix and I think Bryce Dallas Howard where they're just sitting talking to each other, and the whole thing is just their backs. It's that long shot in the doorway. And I was like, this is fucking great. Like,
yeah,
he's good. He's good at this.
He's really good. There's a thing, I've been thinking about this a lot, about there are certain directors who are just great image makers. They make images that stick in your head. Mm. And in whatever you think of the movie, you're going to remember these images. I think like Jordan Peele is a filmmaker like that, where he can't help but put these indelible images on screen. Kubrick is the ultimate one, obviously. And then there are filmmakers like David Fincher, who, you know, occasionally he has an image that's really potent, but really he's technically an incredible filmmaker, but I don't think he's got that same, his movies aren't as immediately iconic as some of these other filmmakers. And I think M. Night can't help but be iconic in the way he directs things.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. What is the film that you used to love, but you've watched it recently and you thought, I don't like this anymore? No thanks.
So I don't want to get into this one too much, but Manhattan is the one that I watched recently that just doesn't.
Fair enough.
And it's still a beautiful movie in a lot of ways. I mean, Gordon Willis's cinematography is beautiful. There are lots of amazing scenes, but it's you know, there are a lot of movies that are being, you have to kind of recontextualize in the wake of it being 2021 or 2021. No, it's 2023. Fuck. That was the last.
Jesus Christ. How long have I been asleep?
I watched this movie recently that used to be my favorite Woody Allen movie. And now all I can see is a middle-aged man writing a 17-year-old character, justifying through her voice him wanting to sleep with 17-year-olds. And it's you know, I think a lot of movies like this, when you watch them young and you've got different ideas about love and romance, like I used to think it was such a romantic movie, and now it feels very sleazy to watch.
It's such a shame, because that ending, the very last minute of that film is so, I always was like, that's one of the great endings, but you're right. Everything is tainted.
Yeah. No,
what is?
I feel the same way. That was one of my favorite endings ever. You got to have a little faith in people. And then you realize that that's Woody Allen writing for a 17-year-old girl, telling him to sleep with her.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you.
There's a movie called Ghost Ship from the early 2000s.
The Michael Bay, Juliana Margulies.
Yes. Did Michael Bay produce it?
I think it's a Michael Bay produced, wasn't it? Platinum Dunes, wasn't it there? one of their first things?
Oh, maybe.
I could be wrong.
I was obsessed with that movie as a kid. I used to watch it over and over and over. And the memory that I associate with that film is I used to carry it around, the DVD of it, in my school bag. And it was the end of term when we'd done all our tests, we'd done all our exams, we had no more work to do. And the teacher said, well, we're not going to do any work today. This was English class. She said, has anyone got a movie we can throw on? And I had Ghost Ship and I took it out of the case. It was an 18 certificate movie. And I handed it to the teacher. I think I was about 15. And she played Ghost Ship. And anyone who's seen Ghost Ship knows the only reason to talk about Ghost Ship is the opening scene of that movie where the producer, Joel Silver, had said, I want to have the most decapitations of any movie in one scene, in our opening scene. And it's got this scene where the awning of the ship, the wire that holds up the lights suddenly comes loose and whips across this dance floor full of 100 people and cuts them all to bits. In classic early 2000s style, they don't realize they've been cut open, and then slowly they start to slide off into pieces. And it's just missed the head of our child protagonist. It's just flown over the top. And to her credit, the teacher let the whole scene play. And then as soon as the title comes up over that, the shot of all the writhing body parts, she just ejected it and handed it back to me silently. We didn't talk about it. But I was a legend. I was a legend for a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah. They carried you out on their shoulders, I bet.
Yeah.
What a fucking day.
Exactly.
What is the film you most relate to, Rob Savage?
The movie that I remember seeing and feeling the most seen by was Spike Jonze's Where the Wild Things Are. That just, it felt like...
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
God, that's sad, that film.
It's so sad. And it's so...
So sad.
It's, I grew up mostly just like playing on my own on my nan's farm. Like I was, I was a lonely child with...
Where was this? What?
In Shropshire. So
right.
Very, very beautiful, very idyllic. But, it was just me and my imagination for long periods of time. And there's something that movie gets so right about. How melancholy it can be to be a kid sometimes, and the kind of loneliness of being a kid and the frustration of being a kid and not understanding how other people tick and how they work and struggling to learn how to relate to people. There's a scene where his older sister, they're having a snowball fight and she makes him cry. And then rather than comforting him, she goes off and drives off with her cool friends. And he goes to her bedroom and he's made her this like thing out of lollipop sticks that clearly meant a lot to him, and he put a lot of work into it. In a rage, he breaks it into pieces. And then Spike just like sits with him for a moment as he realizes he's done this thing that he can't undo, and that he's ruined this gesture that meant a lot to him and meant a lot in his relationship with his sister. And it just sits with that feeling of the rage subsiding and the kind of sadness kicking in. And that movie is so... Just speaks to that feeling of being a lonely kid so well. So I saw that and I thought that was... That was spot on. I saw that a bunch of times in the cinema.
You're answering these very well. You're doing very well. That's a really, really good shout. It's so sad, that film. It really made me very sad. I get you. What is the sexiest film ever made, Rob Savage?
Species 2.
Species 2. Species 2.
Species 2.
Not Species 1? Remind me of Species 2.
Species 2, it's like, I wasn't really watching it as a movie so much as... From what I remember, there's an alien that manifests as a naked woman, and
yes, Natasha Henstridge.
Yes, exactly. No, you've put more thought into this than I have. But
oh, I know Species, but I'm not so hot on Species 2.
Species 2. Well, it was just because it was on TV. It was on TV, and I think it was in the Radio Times, and they had a picture of the woman whose name I've immediately forgotten.
Natasha Henstridge.
And so I snuck downstairs at about 1 in the morning. I think it was on Channel 5. No, of course it was on Channel 5. It was on Channel 5 at 1 in the morning. I snuck downstairs and I taped it off the TV. And it was, again, a lot of these stories are about me passing around illicit movies in my class. But all of my friends would get this copy of Species 2. It would go around and eventually got worn down until it was just... Until it was just flickering white noise on the screen. But
great shout. Wonderful actor. What subcategory to this question? Traveling bonus, worrying wide ons. a film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should?
I don't know if I got, I don't have a specific answer for this, but I think as a child, just on the cusp of adolescence, any Disney movie where the animal character had long eyelashes gave me very weird sensations.
That's it, isn't it? It's just long eyelashes.
That's all it takes. They could be a fox or a stray dog. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, could be a lady dog, a fox, could be, that's it, isn't it? Are there any others? A lion?
Definitely a lion.
Could be a lady lion. What is objectively the greatest film of all time? Not your favourite, but the greatest. Objectively.
Objectively, I think if you were to feed every movie into a machine and through science come up with that answer, it would be A Space Odyssey, 2001 A Space Odyssey. I don't think there's a movie that's stuck in the consciousness as long as that movie that looks still as amazing as that movie does, even when it's blown up on the big screen to 70mm. I don't think there's a movie that's as profound and open-ended as that movie, a movie that you could watch today and still feel like you haven't got all of its, you kind of haven't unraveled all of its mysteries. It's got the greatest cut of all time. It's the only Kubrick movie, I think, that's properly emotional. And it just happens that scene is the death of an AI, but it's really emotional, involving in a way that his other films aren't. And it's full of images. It's full of images that once you see them, you'll never forget. I mean, probably more packed, full of iconic images than any other movie.
Yeah, you can have it.
What's your answer to that one?
It's Don't Look Now.
Pretty good.
It's my answer to the greatest, as in pinnacle of cinema.
Yeah.
You sort of go, what can cinema do? It can do that. Time. It can deal with time in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It can deal with love, sex, grief, time, life in a way that I don't know many other art forms can.
Yeah.
Like what Don't Look Now does in this sex scene, in particular, which is often talked about, but it does the thing of you watch the post-sex at the same time you watch the sex at the same time you watch the pre. And as Donald Sutherland's getting dressed after this, the first time they've clearly reconnected, and it's very beautiful, they've reconnected, but there's almost like, I don't know what the word for it, it's like preemptive nostalgia. It's like even as it's happening, he's mourning the fact that it will be over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That this moment has already passed. And it's this lovely memory, but it's happening at the same time as it's actually happening. And it's that feeling. I have that feeling a lot of, I'll tell you this, I don't mind saying it. When we made Ted Lasso, I would have that feeling a lot of knowing, like, this is so fucking special and one day it will be over. And I'd feel it in the middle of, we'd still have months to go, but I'd still have that sadness of nostalgia for a thing that is still happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Don't Look Now captures that.
Yeah.
In very impressive way.
No, I'd never heard that sequence talked about like that, but that's so true. I think there's a passage in Watchmen, the Alan Moore comic, where it kind of describes how Dr. Manhattan sees time, and it's talking about he's talking about it all in present tense. He's saying, you know, I'm meeting the love of my life, and at the same time, she's throwing her wedding ring back in my face, and we're breaking up, and I'm also seeing her die, and I'm also making love to her the first time, and it's all encapsulated in this moment that every good thing holds this possibility and promise of it going away and it's decaying.
Well, and the idea in Don't Look Now, which is in so many other films, but I think originated from Don't Look Now, this idea of the sixth sense being actually about time, being someone experiencing time all at once, rather than they're seeing the future in the present and the past in the present. Like, time is a circle that's happening all at the same. It's flat.
Yeah.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah. Have you seen Lake Mungo?
Have I? I fucking love Lake Mungo. I love it. And where is the guy? Yeah, that's a perfect example.
I think he's given up filmmaking. I think he works for a charity now. He's doing real work.
He did One and Done.
Yeah.
He made like a perfect film and then said, well, that'll do.
Yeah. I think is probably the most brilliant film about loneliness, about the loneliness of realizing that we all go through it alone, ultimately, for all the kind of fanfare. It's almost that same thing, the character being haunted by her own future.
Lake Mungo, for those of you who haven't seen it, you must see it. It's like a cult classic. It wasn't available, but now it's available again on Blu-ray. Mm. And it's an Australian film made by a filmmaker who then vanished and now works for charity feels like a real documentary. And aside from everything, the performances are genuinely... It's one of those few films where he's like, yeah, this is real. This must be real.
Yeah.
This feels completely real. Everyone is a real person in a documentary.
Completely.
It's amazing. Okay. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Evil Dead 2.
Nice.
It's the movie that taught me about directing. It was the first movie where I noticed the placement of the camera and how that made me feel, how the different directorial choices made me feel. It's like 84 minutes and every single scene feels like your favorite scene. You know, you're always watching it, showing it to friends, and every 5 minutes you're like, this is the best scene's coming up. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, no, this bit. It's just perfect. And you can tell how much fun Sam Raimi is having, and it's infectious. And it's properly cinematic, and it's scary, and it's funny, and it's just, it's like, it does everything you want movies to do in a tight 84.
What did you say? It's properly thematic. Is that what you said?
I don't know. I was rambling.
it sounded smart. Have you seen Evil Dead Rises?
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good, right?
Yeah.
It's really well made.
Yeah, and it's got that same, it's got the same DNA from Evil Dead 2. It's that movie's like 90 minutes, and it's, I've seen it a few times now, and it's like you're like 20 minutes in, you're like, oh fuck, we're here already. She's already getting cheese grated. This is great. It doesn't wait around.
I was thinking about, I guess I've taken it for granted previously, but watching Evil Dead Rises, I'm like, it's a really impressive performance that the mum puts in. I don't know her name, the actor, but
Alyssa,
like,
Sutherland.
It's a very impressive performance. Alyssa Sutherland, amazing. And like, it must be hard work, all the stuff she's doing in that. It's really good.
Yeah. It's the
good
only
performance.
It's the only horror franchise that's really performance based. You know, it's all about this evil getting inside of people and then presenting this kind of pantomime version of all that character's worst qualities. You know, the Boogeyman's easy. It's just a CG thing that pops out every now and then. But like the Evil Dead, you really have to pitch it. Yeah. You have to pitch it just right.
Yeah. We don't like to be negative. Let's do it quick. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
I don't like to shit on movies, so I haven't picked a movie that's actually the probably objectively the worst film I've ever seen, but it's the movie that kind of disappointed me the most, which is, and this is probably going to be the best movie that's ever been the answer to this question, but it's Alfred Hitchcock's Rope.
Okay, great.
I was so excited for. I was working my way through all of his movies, and I was like, the idea of, like, I knew what it was about, these two kind of intellectuals who hide a body under the table and then host a dinner party. I thought that's such an amazing Hitchcockian conceit. And obviously it's based on a real story. And then the idea of Hitchcock shooting the whole thing in single unbroken takes, it sounded like such an amazing movie on paper. And then the movie happens and you realize that Hitchcock's completely neutered by having to shoot everything in a single take, and everything becomes clunky and wooden, and the blocking has to facilitate these camera moves, and the camera has to sprint to get over into the position it wants to be in. And you have, you know, you've got all this material that would otherwise end up on the cutting room floor that's just there, that's laid bare. And then the script is just full of all this awful cod philosophy, and then you know, you've got James Stewart, who's amazing because he's amazing in everything, like valiantly trying to hold it all together, but he's acting against Farley Granger, who's just one of the worst actors who ever graced the screen. And it's such a missed opportunity, and I think that's almost more egregious than a movie that's just outright bad and never stood a chance of being good.
I'd say that's a very, very wise answer. There's humor in your films, there's some big laughs in The Boogeyman. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I bet everyone says this, but Airplane was the movie where I literally felt like I was going to die, because I couldn't get a breath in. I watched it when I was maybe 12 or something. Me and my brother watched it, and I just never seen anything. I didn't know you could do that. I'd never seen a movie that was like metatextual in that way, that was referencing its own existence and calling back and that was playing it so serious but so silly at the same time. That kind of, you know, that thing that Leslie Nielsen does so perfectly wasn't in my, I'd never seen anything like that before. It was just a revelation. And the amount of jokes that were coming at you in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
The fact that there were, in every shot, there's a joke that the movie doesn't care if you see, because there's another movie going on in the foreground. But if you look in the background, there's a sign that you could read that's going to be as funny as the joke in the foreground. It was just unreal.
Yeah, it's fucking funny. It's really, really funny. And also, was it before video? I don't know. But the fact that there's so many jokes where it's like, you need to see this twice.
Yeah.
You need to see this three times because there's three jokes going on. It's great. Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am.
I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator, where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals? Marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas? Ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Rob Savage. You have been brilliant. Congratulations. However, when you were out with a lady and you were trying to impress her and there was a big liquid nitrogen tank in this bar and you went, I'll tell you what, I could drink a whole load of liquid nitrogen. And she said, I don't know if you could. And you went, yeah, I could. And she said, you don't have to. And you went, no, I can. And you took off the tap, went to put it in your mouth, but the whole thing just sprayed out. You immediately froze. She was looking at you. She screamed, 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 screamed. Everyone in the bar looked across. What the fuck? You were frozen. You couldn't say anything. And then you felt yourself tipping forwards. And you were like, oh, God, in your head. You were like, oh, God. And she stepped out of the way and you smashed on the floor of the bar, shattered into pieces. It was only then you died. And I was walking past the bar with a coffin. You know what I'm like? I go, what was that sound of shattering ice in there? Pop my head in. There's this girl sort of screaming and laughing. And I go, what's happened? She goes, oh, I was just on a date with a guy and he said he could drink liquid nitrogen and then it killed him. And I was like, oh, that's mad. How embarrassing. And she goes, yeah, I suspected he wasn't going to be able to. I tried to stop him. And I go, is that him? She goes, yeah, I think his name was Rob. And I go, what, Rob Savage? She goes, yeah. I go, oh, fucking hell. I go, oh, come on and help me with this. And it's so cold, all the bits of you. So we're having to put on like industrial gloves from the bar. We pick up all the shards of you. It's a fucking mess. So much of it. You're in such little pieces, but there's so much of it. The coffin is rammed. There's only enough room in this coffin for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And when you're there, it's movie night every night. One day, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven when it is your movie night, Rob Savage?
You know what? I think it would be Bringing Out the Dead, the Martin Scorsese movie. Which
amazing.
Which
for why? I was watching that very recently. Tell me, why that?
Because I think I'd like to show them up there how underrated that is. It's the Scorsese movie I go back and watch the most. It's like, you know, if Taxi Driver is sleeplessness and whiskey, that movie is like too much caffeine and staying up for three nights in a row. It's so brilliantly nervy. It's got some of my favorite Scorsese set pieces in it. It's a movie that I constantly watch just for how he stages the scenes and moves the camera and blocks. And it's one of those gorgeous looking movies as well. The cinematography is just jaw-dropping. And it's not the best Scorsese movie. It's not it's not probably even my favorite Scorsese movie. It's the one that I can watch again and again and again and just absorb that Scorsese goodness. And I think that's what I'd want to be doing if I was sitting on a cloud after being shattered.
It's also funny. It's so funny, that film. I think it's like got so many proper jokes in it. Really like funny recurring thing of him trying to be fired and the boss is like, I'll fire you tomorrow. I'll fire you tomorrow. It's funny. Like there's so many good jokes in it.
Yeah.
Bing Rames is fucking hilarious in it.
Tom Sizemore.
It's great. Tom Sizemore, terrifying and funny.
Yeah.
Great. Good film.
It's the best.
Well, Rob Savage, what a delight. You're brilliant.
Thank you so much.
What would you like to tell people to look out for? I don't know when this is going to come out. So either The Boogeyman may be out by the time this comes out. So I would say to everyone, go see that. Is there anything else you would like to tell people to look for or listen to from you?
No, that's all I got going on. It's all Boogie all of the time. Go and see it in the cinema. It really is a big screen movie.
Yeah, it is.
And
it is.
If this comes out after Boogeyman's already come out, then we've already established that past and present exist at the same time. So go and see it either way. Yeah.
Thank you very much, man. That was really great.
That was so much fun.
It was very good to see you. Have a wonderful day. Good day to you. So that was episode 254. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Rob. Remember to watch Shrinking and Ted Lasso on Apple TV+. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you so much to Rob for being so open and for giving me his time, for being excellent. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another smasher of a guest. But that is it for now. Have a good week. And in the meantime, please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.